Do it up, bro.
Okay.
Good evening, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another edition of Jay Bird Watching. We are part of the StadiumScene.tv network. Of course, check out our Patreon to support the show. I am your host this evening, Adam Corsair, and joining me are the usual co-hosts, Mr. Brendan Penicar and Craig Borden. Gentlemen, how are we?
Wonderful, buddy. How about you?
Hanging in there. I mean, like, nothing exciting happened today. There was no grand victory. And we did, it's not like we took a series or anything, but I'm
nothing
okay.
Nothing exciting. No bow flows, no nothing.
No.
You know what I realized, gentlemen, is that not only am I now the only Canadian of the three of us, but I am now the only one without at least one dose of a vaccine.
Oh, I'm sorry, guy.
True.
But hey, I know that I will be one of the last ones because hey, I don't leave my house very much during the week, just once or twice per week to go to either the grocery store, pick up some beer, and that's it. So that's fine with me.
Okay. There you go, buddy.
I got that second dose on Saturday coming, and I'm going to be out cold probably on Sunday. And my wife has it Monday, and she's probably going to be out cold Tuesday. But, you know, otherwise.
Adam might tap out, just saying.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm looking forward to today to just sleep and, you know, hopefully it's not too brutal. But anyways, I digress. So, gentlemen, the Jays have wrapped up their latest series against the Yankees, walking it off and taking 2 out of 3 games with a record now of 6-6. They are a 500 ball club. Pretty up and down thus far, but the season is still young and plenty of baseball left to play. Now, before I begin, I want to note that our schedule will be shifting slightly. Normally, as of tonight, we go on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, pretty much every Wednesday. We're going to shift gears next week, and for the next 3 weeks after that, we'll be joining you live on Thursdays. So mark your calendars for April 22nd, 29th, May 6th, and May 13th. We'll be broadcasting for your listening and viewers on those Thursdays. That being said, before jumping in tonight's show, gentlemen, we've had 2 series, as I mentioned, one against LA and, of course, the aforementioned New York series. In a general sense, Brent, we'll start with you. What stood out to you, and how do you feel about this team thus far? Again, it's just early, 12 games deep for this team, but what has stood out for you that may be glaring, may be concerning? What do you got?
Yeah, that's a good question, Adam. I'm honestly thrilled that they're 6-6 because I know we were high after that first Yankee series, and rightfully so, going into the Bronx and taking 2 out of 3. And you know what? There was a chance that they could have swept it. I mean, Stripling wasn't too bad on that second regular season game. But shifting gears, there's a lot that's happened since then. There's been more injuries to the pitching staff, particularly in the bullpen. We've gotten some pretty subpar starting pitching outside of Hyunjin Ryu and Steven Matz. Until this past series when Robbie Ray came back. And there's not too many people hitting consistently outside of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Now, I know we'll talk about this later. Hopefully a few contributors today will start getting it going. But the fact that they've had to use guys like Josh Palacios quite consistently, having to play Rowdy Tellez, who hasn't gotten anything going, Danny Jansen has done nothing behind the plate, and neither has Alejandro Kirk until today. I honestly think that was a low-key nightmarish start when you consider Springer hasn't made his debut and there's still no timeline for when he's going to be back. All the injuries to the rotation, some chinks in the armor to the bullpen. To be 6-6, I'm quite happy, to be quite honest, and just more focusing on the last 2 series. I don't know about you guys, but after when our Sunday's game was rained out, because we knew who was starting that day, I'm so happy Sunday's game didn't happen. I think it was a nice chance for this team to reset, but also kind of kickstarted a topic that we're going to be talking about in a bit. And I think it helped us.
That might have been the biggest no win in the Blue Jays season.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was awesome. I know they lost the series 2 out of 3, but yeah, it kind of felt low key like a split, even though they didn't play on Sunday. So to be 6-6, I'm quite okay with it, considering the inconsistencies across the board and injuries.
How about you, Craig?
How many ducks are we going to leave on the pond? That's my biggest concern. And I think, regardless of the fact that we pulled out a W today, I think that when I was listening to the radio feed at 8 in the 8th inning, they were saying we left 10 runners in scoring position and we're 0 for 10 or something like that with them.
Yep.
It was just slightly disconcerting. Yes, we had some timely hitting regardless of that, but it was, you know, this typical old Blue Jays mood, you know, sell out for everything, right? Hit a home run or lose the ball game. I thought we had a team that had more offensive pop in many ways to beat people than to just rely on the home run. And I think if you looked at the Blue Jays wins, I would say that probably 90% or all of them were games that we had a home run in, at least one and maybe two. So it's a little concerning to me that but I think a lot of that is the fact that the Blue Jays have still not had their everyday lineup for what we have conceived going into the season, any at all. So no George Springer. Rye Tellez hasn't really shown up completely at all. and a bunch of other things that are going on with this lineup right now, as Brendan had mentioned with some of those characters. But more to come, I think. But right now, that's where I'm seeing the big thing. And honestly, I think the pitching staff is exactly the way I imagined it, as much as I don't want to say it. Just enough to hopefully keep the offense in the game so that they can bludgeon people to death. And outside of Mats and Ryu, it's basically what we've been getting over the last week.
Yeah. I mean, you know, given the fact that it's still early, and I don't want to sound Wilner-ish about it, but there are adjustments that he made, and I'm sort of glad that we're seeing these this early. You never want to see anybody go down with injury. You never want to see anybody get sick. You never want to see anybody miss significant amount of time. But given the fact that they're still a 500 ball club, and again, just 12 games, but given the fact that they're still a 500 ball club at this moment, given the injury concerns that we've been, you know, sort of dealing with, that being Merriweather, has he been put on the IL yet? Or yeah. Okay, and yeah. Castro came up, right? All right.
That was a weird one, though. I thought Castro came up because of the whole COVID protocol thing with Teoscar.
Yeah,
there
I don't
was
know.
Some weird situation that they were talking about during the broadcast today, that in the midst of this, it was like they were getting a free tryout for him because they didn't have to put Castro onto the 40-man roster. So in the midst of that, they're basically getting a guy that throws a bajillion miles an hour just for a free audition, who didn't really get the biggest audition in the spring, but because he didn't get to face any of the big guys for other teams.
Right.
And he looked pretty good.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit later. But I know when I sent you the text about Julian Merriweather, they said a hip injury. Now they're calling it oblique. That's a little worrying for a pitcher. So that's all I'll say.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But still, given the fact that they've had these setbacks and they're still a 500 ball club, and I don't know about you guys, I'm not buying this Red Sox bullshit. I don't think they're for real at all. You know,
How much can JD Martinez carry one team?
That's what I'm saying. And, you know, give them credit. They've been beating on the Rays, sure. They lost to the Orioles in the beginning of the season, but now they sort of corrected themselves. I don't see that to be sustainable. I don't think they have the firepower to make that sustainable, so I do see the Blue Jays sort of catching ground there. But my biggest concern walking into this season was the Yankees, right? And we've proven that we can handle the Yankees. Maybe not Garrett Cole, but we've proven that we can handle the Yankees, or at least be a formidable opponent for them. So when you balance it all out and consider the fact that we don't have a fully healthy squad and the best player on the team has yet to even play for us, but has taken batting practice and has looked pretty good, being of 6-6 at this point, I'm okay with it. And Brendan, I couldn't agree with you more about the rainout. It was a gift from God. God did not want Tanner Roark to start that game. It was plain and simple.
Now just go over here.
Go away. And it did offer quite a bit of a reset, even though the game before, the Blue Jays had significant run production. What was it, 15-2?
Yeah.
Keyword bludgeoning, like I was.
Yeah, and they didn't even hit a home run.
Exactly.
That was the one that was the difference.
Didn't hit a homer.
And you want to see that kind of run production. So given the hiccups and stuff, I think this team is in a good spot. And they definitely are, you know, connecting. The chemistry is there. I'm liking what I'm seeing. But
how much fun was watching Rowdy Tellez hit that home run yesterday and then nobody?
Oh, great.
Just him. That's perfect. Speaking of team chemistry,
I agree. They knew not to to make a big deal out of it, and obviously he took advantage of the moment. But look, we already brought him up. Let's talk about Tanner Roark. Now again, I don't know a single Blue Jays fan that's unhappy about the demotion of Tanner Roark to a long relief role, save for maybe Mike Wilner. But it was announced that he'd be transitioned
twice
to that role
show,
effectively.
Adam.
Yes, that's it. I promise no more Wilner references. He's been effectively eliminated from the starting rotation in favor of a returning Robbie Ray. so far. We sort of saw this coming last week. We talked about it. The Jays were legitimate in their attempts to give him one more shot. But given the fact that Robbie Ray was coming back, obviously they needed to make room. He was the easy guy out. Now, given that Ray's solid in his return and how it has looked, Ryu has been outstanding. Brendan, is this the end of Roark as a starter, even if an injury happens? Do you think the team has learned their lesson? Or do you think, like a cockroach, he's just going to come right back, and or like a horror movie, he's going to stick the hand out of the grave? And
it's going to be like one of those where they literally chop the guy's pinky off, then his arm, then and then not. Then he keeps coming back.
Yeah. Well, I would say yes, Adam, but there still is some uncertainty who's going to start tomorrow's game because the Mets have an extra day's rest and not start him on normal rest. I mean, we saw what good that did for Hyunjin Ryu. We knew coming in to last year he loved pitching with an extra day's rest, and that was evident yesterday with how much he handled that Yankees lineup. But the fact that they didn't fully commit to Roark starting tomorrow and are very much keeping the door open to be like, okay, Steven Matz, just go on your regular turn, makes me think that they will keep him in the bullpen. Now watch, we're going to end this recording and about an hour later they're going to announce, yep, Tanner Roark, you're starting tomorrow. Yeah. Just because we need you to. But
what the Roark?
Like, this is his last possible shot here. Like, this is the Blue Jays saying, hey, we know we have you to a $12 million deal. We're not prepared to eat the money quite yet. And we also want to keep, they're just saying this to his face probably or whatever. It's like, yeah, we still want to keep you on the roster. You still have a part of this team. Long relief. The only time I want to see him is if they're down 6-7 plus runs. And the only time I want to see him with a lead is when they're up 6-7-8 runs. And to that point, he didn't even show that he could do that in that Texas start, even if it's covering 3 or 4 innings, or last year. He didn't show it at all. So he's not suited for the bullpen, but this is it. This really is it.
So you're telling me you want him eating the Elvis Luciano innings from like 2016? No, 2018.
Exactly.
What do you think, Craig?
I saw enough out of Zoik in the little footage I did see today. Yes, he gave up 4 earned runs, but really the bad pitches he threw, 2 bad ones were to Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
So if that's what I'm going to get from Zoik, I would rather see what his ceiling is, because I think it's obviously a lot higher than what Tanner Roark's would be in a starting rotation idea. I'm honestly kind of upset that they didn't give that they gave innings to Thornton today, because I would have loved to see him just go out and do 3 innings or at the work. He's already been, every one of his starts, has he been 2 innings? Are pretty damn close to him when he's come out of the bullpen so far. So I think he's shot to actually try stretching out for a couple innings, or worst case scenario, he's a longer opener guy, right? So I would rather in that situation at least have somebody like Thornton eating up those hitters in the beginning of a lineup to start the game off. And then if I had to, I'd feel a little bit more comfortable maybe throwing an inning Roark's way in the middle of the game or something like that. But right now, he's just there to me, and I really am wondering how much that Castro kid looked good. Yeah. I wonder how much something like that is going to end up driving this, or if injuries are going to keep Roark around just longer. But I think there's too many young, talented arms in this system, and random guys like Castro that's come out of nowhere that have incredible stuff. And he was actually locating his pitches, which is apparently what his problem has been and why he's bounced around from team to team. Maybe that's the other fun thing that we get to do. You know, maybe that's the difference between Jordan Romano that was, picked up on the Rule 5 draft by the Rangers, or with the Jordan Romano we got back. You know, it could be that same thing with Castro. And you never know. But right now, I'd rather take that flyer on anybody than having to worry about giving more innings to Tanner Roark. And that's just because that last start didn't fill me with any confidence that he can even do anything proper anymore. And I'd rather have somebody else eating him up or eating those innings and let whoever take a flyer on Tanner Roark off the waiver wire.
Totally.
Yeah, I just, for me, when you have options like Anthony Kay waiting in the wings, this obviously just comes down to the contract. And I don't know that that's a justifiable reason to force someone out there when you know that he's been just pitching like hot garbage. Right now, the Blue Jays are not in a position where they can be cute. Right. And you can't be in a position where you can sort of test the waters. And I know last week we, all came to the agreement, or I think we did, that they're probably going to give him one more shot. I get it. It's admirable, and that is, it's a $12 million contract, so it is sort of a lot. But that's shame on you. You sort of just live and learn. Right? The Blue Jays are not absolved from handing out bad contracts. Right? It's happened. Look at the Kendrys Morales contract. Look at the Randall Grichuk contract. Even though he's producing right now, I still don't know that that contract full and through and through. Look at the Vernon Wells contract, even though it's not nearly as much of an albatross, that being Tanner Roark's contract in comparison to Vernon Wells's. But yeah, it's just one of those things that you sort of just take your licks and you just, you live with it. That's it. And you just see what you have in the system. Now, remember, they traded for Anthony Kay, right? Mm-hmm. He was someone that they wanted and they got him. And so utilize him, right? They see him as a starter, don't they? And I just, for me, there's no justifiable reason to move off of or to not give Anthony Kay the start in favor of Tanner Roark. It doesn't make sense to me.
No, it doesn't at all. You know what? Just looking back last year, Anthony Kay was used a lot out of the bullpen early. And then for whatever reason, I don't know if it was strictly Barnes-based, but for whatever reason, he just got phased out and phased out and phased out to the point where he was, A, left off the playoff roster, I'm pretty sure, but B, barely pitched towards the end of the season. Like, his appearances got very, very sporadic. So I don't know, like, what their plan with his him moving forward. He showed me enough back in 2019 when he made those, I think, four starts to be like, yeah, this kid has something. He showed enough out of the bullpen last year when he pitched, and maybe before a few rough outings, that made me say, yeah, there's something there. Even if you're a four or a five as a lefty that can get outs and do pretty well, surely you're going to be better than Tanner Roark at this point. So yeah, I'll actually be kind of upset if Anthony Kay does not start tomorrow. I'd be fine if they go with Steven Matz on regular rest, but again, he's kind of like in the same ballpark as Hyunjin Ryu, where you want to be careful with him because Matz has had an injury history, as has Ryu, and if you can give guys a blow every so often and give them an extra day's rest, that's only going to help them long term. Look, there's so many more innings and so many more games to cover this year compared to the city last year. It's crazy to say, going back to your comment early, Adam, about how early it is and that you're happy at 6-6. Three games, if this was last year, they'd be three games away from being 25% done the season. And 6-6, I'm not so sure if I'm happy at that point. Town. Now we're like 10% done, like not even, like being 12
There's
games in.
There's still time!
So much time. So it's 100% early, but anyway, so just wanted to remark on that because it's so true, the difference in mindset. But going back to covering innings, yeah, I don't see any reason why Anthony Kay shouldn't get the start tomorrow.
So on that note, Brendan, all I could say about that whole summary of what you just said there is it went dumb and dumber moment for me for a second. And said, so you're telling me there's a chance.
Yeah, that's it.
So I gotta inject this because I just summarize this perfectly. One of our listeners, Peck on Twitter, actually said that Tanner Roark's last actual quality start was September 4th, 2019.
Wow.
And okay. Then the fact that he mentioned that him serving up BP fastballs is not helping anybody.
Yeah.
So if that's a true fact, that, and I'm assuming it is right now, 100%, that sounds 100% accurate, that his last quality start was literally that long ago. So he would have been wearing, that means he hasn't thrown a quality start as a Blue Jay. And I don't remember him throwing one that well. So. Right. Even, you know, the diesel engine never got into six innings last year, right?
No, I don't think he touched the six.
Well off tracks by then.
I know his first start last year against Washington, he went five innings, and I think he only gave up a run or two, and that was like, okay, if you do that for the rest of the season, I'm totally fine with that. But no, he
we
didn't
come
close.
We saw that go derail real quick, right?
Very much derailed.
I got one other comment after you're done, Adam.
No, go ahead, man. Go.
From our Twitter fund here, because we started this conversation off with our concerns were for the Blue Jays thus far. One of our loyal listeners, Nick, here on Twitter, mentioned that his only concern is watching Vladdy do splits at first base.
And hey, man.
So I had to interject that one because it was just too
funny.
No,
it's cool.
That's totally fair.
I replied back to him that we would have to ask his yoga instructor, Rowdy Tellez, to see how he's really doing in his stretches.
Only around this part of the infield that he draws a line. Look, you know, given the fact that in the beginning of the season, I was like, I just want to see Vladdy leg out a stand-up double. He's done that numerous times. I think this is a brand new Vladdy Guerrero at this point. And
he's vicious, man.
Yeah, he is a very nimble character. But I wanna hold off on the Vladdy talk because I'm sure we're going to stroke his ego a little bit. I wanna sort of transition to three players in particular that I am concerned with. One of which maybe he's sort of breaking out of it, but still there is some underlying concerns. And the three players in particular are Danny Jansen, Rowdy Tellez, and yes, breaks my heart to say it, King Cavan. Rowdy has seemingly started to break out a bit, as I mentioned. He hit a home run. Craig, you mentioned it, and to the praise of no one in the dugout, but he's been hitting the ball. He hit today a little bit. He's been making contact. It seems like his confidence is boosting a little bit. But these past few games notwithstanding, it's become increasingly clear that we need more. These three, I think personally, Jansen's the biggest one that we should be concerned with. Of course, I'm not going to be concerned with Cavan. I think he's fine. But
matter of time.
Yes. Of these three, Craig, which of the three concerns you the most, and what can be done to mitigate these issues other than perhaps playing them more? And I know that's difficult with Rowdy because first base with Vlad, and he's been so good. But how do you mitigate these issues specifically with someone like Danny Jansen, Rowdy Tellez, and Cavan Biggio?
I think Rowdy Tellez has got a good week here where he can show that he's actually a big valuable part of this offense, right? There's just enough going on in the outfield where you're going to see Lourdes, Grichik, and then either Davis or Palacios playing the other one, right? That's pretty much leaving a good vacancy in our DH spot, so you're probably going to see either a rotation of starters going through that spot for a day off, half day kind of thing, or you're going to see Vladdy and Rowdy Tellez literally trading off days, which is what you've seen the last 2 days, right? And I think the biggest thing for Rowdy right now is building up that confidence. He was completely kind of going out of his game, I think, the first, 2 weeks of the season here. You could see it. He was pressing to the point where he was just trying to force something to happen rather than what we've seen from him, letting the ball come to him and just attacking it in the zone. If Rowdy Tellez is patient at the plate, more of what we saw today is going to happen. And I think what he's been doing up to this point in the season has been just too much where he's just swinging at pitches that he would normally not swing at. And that's what the difference is between what we saw is Captain Clutch Rowdy Tellez coming in and doing walk-off home runs versus what we've seen him literally getting his first hit of the season or his second one or the other today. And I think he's starting to show signs that he's like, I'm done with this, and he's just... Today in the replay of I've watched after listening to the radio feed of watching him at the plate during his appearances, it just seemed like he was more centered, more focused, and just letting it come to him, and then the home run happened. So I think there's something coming from him. Cavan Biggio, same thing. There's something just off in his timing, and I think it's going to click. I'm not worried about Cavan Biggio one bit because his defense one way or the other has been solid at third base. And I know eventually he's going to hit. The biggest problem is he's hitting right now when not everybody else is hitting. Right. Everybody's sticking out. And I'm still very concerned over Danny Jansen. I think he's unfortunately the one that's probably going to be the oddball out of this conversation if things continue. Just because there is somebody that one way or the other is going to put barrel to the baseball in Alejandro Kirk. And I don't know if you guys saw the home run or saw the highlight of it. He freaking roped that thing.
Yeah, he did.
So, and I think right now Kirk's biggest problem is I think he was 0 for 13, 0 for 12 or something like that. That's just not enough at bats for him to really get going, I think. He was batting like 500 last year in those at bats, I know, but people forget that, he's still a rookie. And he's going to do, though. And knowing Alejandro Kirk is... I was going to compare him to any hitter that we, as far as just complete, like, flat-out lab, and his game is closer to Tony Gwynn than watching somebody like Randal Grichuk, He's going to, one way or the other, put the ball in play versus striking out is what I was trying to balance out in that equation there. Mm-hmm. And I think that one approach is going to be a lot different than what the hell Danny Jansen does, just because, unfortunately, Danny Jansen is a different swinger at that point. And I think he just will swing a little bit more at everything, which will lead to more strikeouts.
It's tough to rank them because you can take it a few different ways. I'm the least surprised at Danny Jansen's struggles because this is just what we've seen in the last 2 years, and it really, really sucks. We've all been big defenders of him, and even for me, fuck, I bought his jersey going into 2019. I'm a huge believer in him, and I love the guy. I think he's awesome. Good guy, too. But it's starting to wane on me a little bit that I can't keep on defending you anymore. Like, this just unacceptable, especially for a team that wants to compete and go far in the playoffs, or at least maybe contend and try to win the AL East. And early returns against the Yankees, who are their biggest competitors for the AL East title, so far so good. They're going to be able to play the Yankees tough for the rest of the year. They should, just like they have the last few years. So from a surprise standpoint, I would say Jansen is the least, but I am also the most concerned about it because I'm not liking the prospects of his long-term future with this team anymore. And I was willing to year pass, but this is just continuing. And this would be three seasons in a row of nothing offensively. Telez, I'm going to give a pass for a start this season. He started very, very slow last year, too, and he was starting to get on my nerves, but he picked it up as the season went along and became probably a huge way. And he became one of their second or third best hitter on the team, right behind Teoscar Hernandez before he injured himself. If the Blue Jays had a fully healthy Rowdy in that series against Tampa, the quick two-game series that got swept, they may have had a little bit more of a fighting chance because Rowdy just lengthened that lineup so much more with how well he was last year. So I'm not surprised at Rowdy's struggles either because it's the same as last year. So at the same time, I'm not that concerned with Rowdy. I think today I didn't get to see any of the game today, to be fully honest. But looking at the box score, he got two hits, hit his first home run last night. So things are looking better for Rowdy Telez. Hopefully they're going to need him moving forward. I will admit I am pretty about Kevin Biggio, but that's because I expect the most out of him, of the three guys. He's supposed to be a cornerstone of this team moving forward, and if he doesn't end up being that, then he's going to be relegated to a rover around the field where he'll play here, there, play everywhere. So from the perspective that I expect the most from Kevin Biggio, I'm definitely the most disappointed and also the most surprised, but at the same time, go back and look at his splits from last year. He started off 2020 really well. He batted almost 270, six home runs, and he didn't strike out very much. As the season went along, people figured him out. His batting average dipped by almost 40 points. Only hit two home runs in the back half of the season, and his strikeouts ticked up like crazy. And you're starting to see that again, the strikeouts tick up. Whether that's the league finally figuring out that he can't really hit a high fastball and he does not stop himself from chasing a high fastball, maybe they've started to figure him out. At the same time, Craig, you're very right. His defense has been really good. I've been impressed with him over at third. I don't think he's a liability, but he's going to have to turn it around at the plate decently soon before some people, I'm not going to say me, I'm not going to say any of us because I think we're willing to be more patient with him, but some people are going to be start being like, okay, when can we start talking about Jordan Groshans or somebody else at the base? So Kevin, from the perspective of I expect the most out of you, he's the one I'm most concerned about moving forward.
Yeah. You mentioned the strikeout rates. This whole team is striking out a ton.
Yeah, they are.
Way more than I would expect.
Yeah, and they're not walking at all. I'm looking at the stats right now. The person with the highest walk rate is only at 17. Vladdy, with just slightly over 17%.
I was about to be having a heart because I've sadly seen enough walks from Randall Grichuk to think that he might have been the guy you were about to say.
Yeah, no, Randall Grichuk is 10.5%. And whereas the strikeout rates for both Danny Jansen and Kevin Biggio are around 32%. So they are striking out a ton. Yeah, and look, I think that Danny Jansen, I was not overly impressed with him to begin with. I know his last minor league season when he was with the Bisons, he was tearing it up. He was outstanding, but you know, it doesn't translate into the big leagues. And you know, you've had time to acclimate yourself as a big league catcher. And I don't know that having Alejandro Kirk is doing him much favors in between the ears. That's not to say that Kirk shouldn't be on this team. He most certainly should. He's on here, though, for his hitting. He's not necessarily on here to be a catcher-first player for this team. Danny Jansen is the catcher-first player, and although his defense has been pretty good, if you're not hitting, you're not winning, right? Yeah. And we talk about how much this whole lineup has the ability to mash, but you have to contribute in that, right? And the strikeouts are killing us. These strikeouts are killing us, and it's not so much like Cavan. Cavan's just swinging and missing, as we mentioned, Brendan, especially the high heat. Jansen's looking at pitches. There's something going on with him in between the ears, and I don't know if it's the pressure of Alejandro Kirk being on the team, but it's got to be a dread. I'm not sure that he's part of the fabric of this team's future. We've talked about Rowdy. I couldn't agree more. I do like what I'm seeing from him right now, although I'm not sure that we're going to see that same breakout potential from him. Maybe, and I know this is a topic later on, maybe if and when, rather when, they go back to Buffalo, he'll be able to replicate that same success. But right now, I'm just not seeing it. And give him credit where it's due. He's been a very good teacher for Vladimir Guerrero at first base. He's been sacrificing. He's a team-first player. I admire that. I admire that. And he's not getting the opportunities that he otherwise would if Vlad was still at third. So I admire the fact that he's not really playing much and he's trying to make the best out of situations. And again, it's kind of hard to hit your way out of a rut if you're not playing. So I'm not concerned with him. But again, I kind of wish we sold high. When it comes to Cavan, I am not concerned in terms of his production moving forward. But the one thing I've noticed from Cavan Biggio is he's got to knock it off with this launch angle bullshit uppercut swing. It is not a level swing. Every time he's trying to swing, and if you're watching the feed, you'll see what I'm saying. It's always like a golf swing up. It's not a fluid motion. It's not a straight swing. He's trying to get that launch angle. Cavan Biggio is not a power. He will never be a power hitter. Get that out of your mechanics. Get that out of your style. You are not a power hitter. I think his launch angle is somewhere between at like 19 degrees. It is crazy.
And we found out that Marcus Semien can have the biggest launch angle ever, and it can go 99 miles an hour, and it'll just...
Yep, same thing. I think his is around 20%. I think of those two, I think Semien obviously has the highest launch angle, and I think Cavan's shortly behind him. But the thing is, when Semien hits, it is making contact and it is skying, and right. He does have the potential for power. Cavan does not have that potential. Now, I'm not saying he can't hit home runs. Obviously, he did against LA in the opening series. Great, but that's not enough to make me think, look, you're a power hitter. The more he does, the lower in the lineup he's going to get. And Cavan Biggio is the type of guy outside of George Springer that should be in the one or the two hole, but he's not, because he should be a guy that just focuses on getting on base. I think Jansen, the problem with Cavan Biggio is in between the ears. You're learning a new position at third, which he's been good. Like he's got zip to the ball at third. He's the position, although it sometimes eludes him when it comes to bad bounces and bad breaks. I'm going to give him a pass there because that's not his normal everyday position. But he's been serviceable. And I do think the third baseman of the future is Groshans. And I think everybody else knows that too within the organization. But when it comes to that lack of production, or rather that not elite production that he's used to in the field when he played at second base, it bleeds over to the at-bat position where he's not really focusing on just making contact. And that's the thing. He's not trying to make just contact. He's trying to mash the ball. You are not a power hitter. So if these mechanics can get sort of sorted out, and I think Cavan Biggio has the potential for that to happen quickly, I'm not concerned. But it starts with the swing. I don't know if you guys notice the same thing, but it is just a
pretty violent
in all the swing. It's a golf swing, Craig. Yeah, you nailed it.
That's very much like Colby Rasmus's swing. His was a golf swing too. And there was a lot of swing and miss with Colby Rasmus.
It creates too many holes. And for somebody like Cavan Biggio, who was we've watched it as Blue Jays fans, and he is a very good hard ball hitter, and he needs to get back to thinking line drive first, and then I think everything else will fall into place. And if you hit the ball hard and you square it up, it doesn't matter what your damn launch angle is. Eventually, you'll hit a few home runs. Cavan Biggio has always struck me as a guy that's going to run into 15 home runs in a season, and then hopefully bat around 270. And I don't see that as a problem. He's going to hit plenty of doubles, and especially if we ever get to frickin' go back home and play in the Rogers Center, when he hits that turf, man, he can run all damn day. It's just how it is. And when he gets to that point, I think it's going to be clicking just right. But right now, he needs to seriously take some good BP time and figure out what the heck is going on with his swing, because it has gotten more exaggerated, even through the spring, I think, regardless into where we are now.
Yeah, he's been making some non-Cavan-like plays, specifically today. I don't know if you guys heard it or caught it. Brendan, I know you said you didn't watch it, but Craig, did you see him round third on that and get caught up in that rundown here about this?
No, I didn't see it. I heard it very briefly, and it just sounded way too confusing without seeing the video through the radio feed. I was like, yep, okay, I'll find that later. And then they didn't show it on the highlights.
No, so he hit what should have been a double. There was a bobble, and he ran to third, and he had it, but he turned the bag, right? And the what they did was they threw it home to keep him from and he just turned the bag at third, and he got caught in a rundown. And this was on a 2-out play.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, dude, you cannot – you just take that bag at third, hold up, because you're not hitting an inside-the-park home run. Why he – I don't know if it was his momentum or whatnot, but that is, to me, from what little I've seen about him, and this is why I admire him so much, his baseball IQ is so high. And seeing boneheaded plays like that, that's a rookie mistake. And yes, he's still considered young within the game, and this is a learning experience, but that is not a Kevin Biggio type of play for me. He's smart to know to hold up, and I don't know if he just ignored the third base coach or whatever, but to me, it's just things like that that bleed over to the next at-bat for him. And I, there's obviously no evidence for this. You can't measure it, but he's just got to get out of his own way and just hit for contact. That's it. Just put the ball in play. That's it.
Woosa.
Yeah, and I'm fired up because he's, you know, my man crush Monday. So I think he's going to be fine. No turns. All right, so let's move on to some three players that we are happy about, that we don't have many concerns with. The three players I like to focus on in particular, and Brendan, you sort of brought them up already, Vladdy, Bo, and of course, Hyunjin Ryu. Vladdy, he's been looking like a totally different player. At the plate, defensively at first, in the dugout, he is having so much fun, looking so much more comfortable playing the position at first, which is relatively new for him. His defense has been pretty terrific, but the fact that he's stretching out for plays, there was that line drive against the Angels, I believe, where he just nabbed it in the line drive over his
head. Last year, Vladdy, that easily was 10 feet over his head.
No. Yes. He wouldn't even jump for it. He's been great, and he's been making, you know, adjustments at the plate. He's been, I think he's on a 12 game. I think he's hitting every game, if I'm not mistaken. Right. So he's just, and he's not hitting for power. That's, I guess he's the leader of the team in Springer's absence. Again, the pitch by pitch adjustments that he's been phenomenal. Defense at short could be a little bit better. I don't believe that he's necessarily the shortstop of the future for this team. We'll get into that if you want, but I think it will improve over time. Lastly, Ryu has been looking like a bona fide ace, and you know we've talked about him already a little bit, but man, he just was magnificent yesterday again. Brendan, of these players, which has stood out to you the most in terms of their performance, and which of these do you think has the best chance of sustaining the success, at least you know, relatively, throughout the entire season?
All three.
Tell me how you read about it.
No, look, we said last week on the show that I really think that we just got a very, very brief taste of what Hyunjin Ryu really is. And this, like yesterday, that's what he did with the Dodgers. He had his pitch count low. I know this, later on in the sixth inning, they really got to him and worked his pitch count a little bit and started hitting some balls hard. But my goodness, I'm pretty sure going into the sixth inning, going into the seventh inning, because he pitched 6 2/3, I think he was only at like just above 70 pitches, maybe 75 pitches. It's a fantastic pitch count to be in. At that point, if he was in line with the way the first six innings went, I was like, man, he has a chance to go a complete game here. And other people were saying the same thing on Twitter. So this is bona fide ace stuff. I know he hasn't actually shut them out, but by Yankee standards, he shut the Yankees down and shut them out the two of the three starts he's made, and he should have won. Actually, he probably should. I know record doesn't mean anything, but he probably should be 3-0, to be honest with you. If the team has given him a little bit more run support, he definitely would be. He was fantastic. The game against Texas, where he went seven innings, I know they lost, that was 2-1. They couldn't get him one more run to at least tie it and get him off the hook for that loss. But he loaded, got himself in trouble, loaded the bases in the seventh inning, got out of it without giving up a run. No, he's been phenomenal. I can't say enough good things about him, and he's such a pleasure to watch pitch. It's still hard to believe that he's a Blue Jay, considering how hard it is to get people here and sign the top tier starting pitcher on the free agent market, or at least one of them. Just justifies all the amazing feelings we had when we found out that he signed back in December 2019. So for me, Ryu's definitely stood out. Vlad, for sure. I mean, I think that's the unanimous answer award for every Blue Jays fan you ask, because this is, yeah, this is what he was doing in the minor leagues. Now, one thing you mentioned, Adam, which is very fair to point out, it hasn't been necessarily for power, but that's okay. I would rather see him get on base. I'm pretty sure he's still over 5 on base percentage. So he's been on base over half the time. He's walking. He's making hard contact on even his singles. Like, it's only him and Giancarlo Stanton, I believe, that that consistently average like over 110 miles per hour on so many batted balls. It's crazy. The power will come for sure. It's just a matter of lengthening the lineup, getting other guys hitting, because if the lineup's firing on all cylinders, who the hell do you pitch to after Vlad? Like, let's just say the new lineup has Vlad batting third, Teoscar comes back and maybe heats up himself, Luring in the fifth spot or the sixth spot, Springer is in the leadoff spot. When I don't know where Simeon will bat, I'm assuming second when Springer's back. There's a lot of power in that lineup, and you start to be like, okay, Vlad is not the only one who can beat us now. So the power will come, and honestly, this is what I expect from Bo Bichette. The first few games, he started off slow at the plate, and it was starting to drive me a little crazy with some of the bobbles that he had at shortstop. But now that he's hitting again and contributing with power, that's just secondary for me. Contribute at the plate, do what you do, and they are truly showing why those two are the legit bona fide core that will be superstars that are hopefully in Toronto for years.
Yeah. Bo Bichette, this is about the best thing I can say for him, period, right now. 87 games of his major league career thus far, right? He already has 52 extra base hits.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's fucking nuts. Yeah. It's about the best way of saying it. And then he broke 50 before the game even started today, too, basically. You know, so it's great. You know, no big deal. And then now just throw a walk-off in against the Yankees. Second time in his career.
Yeah.
So the young core is in full establishment now with Vladdy and Bo running, and I think the biggest difference between Bo this year, I think he just knows it's his team. I think it's literally that, where it's like, okay, yeah, I'm sure I'm the guy, but now it's just boom, done, right? And now the fact that he's got Vladdy right there backing him up, it makes it that much better. The biggest thing from Vlad this season, Vlad is back to having fun playing the game of baseball.
Yes.
And that is the biggest thing that I saw from him watching him in his minor league career. He just looked like a kid playing against, you know, an adult playing against children in the minor leagues. There was no ever any kind of complications for him. He just kept chugging through everything. And the fact that he has that kind of feeling back again right now, you can see it. Just even him goofing around, you know, chilling with Bo on the bench, you know, hanging out, having a good time. Awesome. or just the little things like the shenanigans and whatnot, or just pouring the water on Bo during the walk-off and stuff. He wasn't doing those kind of things the last two seasons. And, you know, I just think those are the differences in the world for him. If he is having fun in the dugout and around this team, it's because he is walking the walk. And we have seen nothing but what I coined way back when he was in the minor leagues, is Vladdy Vicious. Because it's kind of ironic and funny because he's a goofball. Yeah. So Vladdy Vicious is like, you know, just don't worry about it. Yeah. Have fun. But I think the same thing I said about Kevin Biggio, those home runs are going to get more and more ridiculous as he continues just to barrel up the baseball and keep continuing to drive the ball up the middle. I think he got a little happy last season.
Yes.
And in the midst of that, it really skewed his game in one direction. And when you're only looking to pull the ball, I'm sorry to say, we're not in the days of Jose Canseco where you can just rope the ball around the left field a billion, you know, miles. But Vladdy is set, and I love what he's been doing with his game. And this is eerily similar to what I got to see with you, Adam, back in the day when we were seeing him in the New Hampshire Fisher Cats uniforms and the Buffalo Bison uniforms. It's just very similar as the game goes. At those times when he was doing really good in that, same thing, up the middle, up the middle, up the middle. And then Ryu, how can you be upset with that? Right. Cy Young right now.
Oh,
he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. Mm-hmm. I think I was watching MLB TV this morning, and they had stated there's only one other pitcher that has a lower ERA over the last like 3 or 4 seasons, and it was Max Scherzer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was insane to see that he was on a list with Verlander and everything. Just right there, number two.
Yeah.
Lowest ERA.
That's crazy considering how different pitchers they are, where Scherzer comes at you with heat and whatnot, and Ryu's all about pinpoint control and mixing his pitches. It's impressive just to see the contrast in styles between other pitchers who are just as good, because Ryu's honestly, pitchers like him, as velocity becomes more important, pitchers like Hyunjin Ryu are going to slowly be faded out of the game. And that's a shame. I think Buck Martinez said one of the smartest things I think I've ever heard him say. Pitching is about throwing off the timing of the opposition, not about just blowing it right by him, just mixing your speeds, varying your pitches, all that kind of stuff. And it's true. It really is. Disrupt the hitter at the plate, and that's what Ryu does.
Yeah, I always make the comparison of somebody like Ryu or Scherzer to there's a reason Greg Maddux was that good in the era of Randy Johnson.
Right.
Just saying. Greg Maddux was the shit. And in all reality, Hyunjin Ryu's in that same thing. He's a little smarter than the guy at the plate, and he knows what to do to get him off his game and do pretty much the exact opposite of whatever the hell the guys are thinking coming. And, oh, you thinking fastball? Oh, here, let me drop this 69-mile-an-hour hook on you. He did that the other night. It was nuts.
All three of them have been phenomenal. And I think you guys, you know, hit on a good point about Vlad, about just trying to have fun with the game again. And I think he walked into the situation, whether or not you think it's deserved or whatever, I think the talent speaks for himself. You know, there's a lot of pressure, right? This is a guy that was, I think Anthopoulos took him when he was 16 years old, right? And he was groomed to be in this position. He was groomed to be the face of this franchise. And he comes in with an MLB Network special for his debut. It was a giant press conference.
Brennan and I were there.
Yeah. You know, multiple press conferences, multiple appearances, media appearances. It gets to your head. I think the thing that people like to overlook, and maybe it's, you know, it's inadvertent, but the thing that people overlook the most when it comes to Vladdy, I think what fucked him up was the home run derby. Right. It does have the tendency to throw off your swing. And, you know, he's going toe to toe and he's making it down to the final two. And he's just trying to rope things. And that can go over into your performance. Right. And when you have that much pressure on you to be the face of the franchise and, you know, to follow in the footsteps of an Edwin Encarnacion or a Jose Bautista and be this power hitter, maybe you're not, you know, trying to do that, but it's still sort of the expectation from fans, especially those that have bled over from 2015 and 16. That's a lot of pressure. And there's a lot of thought process that happens while you're at the plate, and it throws off your rhythm. Now, unlike Cavan, he's not looking to mash. He's just looking to simply make contact. I mean, the velocity, the exit velocity on pitches is still there. He's hitting the ball really fucking hard.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not necessarily traveling, and it doesn't need to, right? As long as you have some base, you can drive in an extra run here and there, and you're getting on base yourself. You're making things happen, right? You're still keeping the pitcher that much more aware of your potential and that much more aware of your productivity. Same thing with Bo. Craig, I think you nailed it. He's driving balls right up the middle. He's not trying to pull anything, right? And I think that's important because, like, he's finding ways to beat the shift. Right, he's finding ways to just put the ball into play and to just hit just for contact. I can't stress that enough. And I think that's the difference maker for these players. And going back to Vlad about having fun with the game, like it's the little things, right? When Rowdy got his first hit in the first game against the Yankees, obviously he's joking, but Vladdy's like, get the ball, that's his first hit, get the ball, as if he's a rookie, right, about Rowdy. He's just trying to tease him. And I just think that when you have that aura, it's almost like Big Poppy-esque. When you have that aura, you're just trying to have fun, it bleeds to the other players on your team. And going back to Ryu, man, it's been phenomenal, dude. Like, watching that performance, it was just like watching Picasso. He's just like making art out there, and it's
let me paint it here.
Effortless. Yeah, it's effortless. And it's just, it's massaging the pitches. It's not like, you know, driving them in for power, even though he has the ability to do that. It's just massaging it into the place. And it's just, it's perfect. We haven't had a pitcher like this maybe since Price, because Price was that good when he pitched for us in 15. But before that, since maybe Holiday. Though, you know, he might not be as talented as Roy Halladay, and that's not a knock on Ryu at all. Just Halladay was just a beast in and of itself. But the way he approaches the game reminds me a lot of Burley. Even though Ryu is, I think, a better pitcher than Burley, just his approach and the speed in which he pitches and the confidence and just the let's just go kind
in
of
his prime, at least, Burley.
Yes, right? Yes.
by the time the Blue Jays saw Burley, you know, that was not the same guy we watched with the White Sox for years, throwing no-hitter games. But Ryu is definitely a par above and unsung hero of Major League Baseball pitchers. You know what I mean? In that stat I dropped on you guys a few minutes ago, nobody would even expect him on the list or like be in the top five or the top 10 Major League Baseball pitchers when they're doing the MLB network countdowns and stuff like that. I think he was number 9 on that list. He snuck in. So, which is saying a lot. And the fact that he does do that is just insane. And we get to play every fifth or sixth day is great.
Yeah, I feel like if we were in the mindset of being an opposing fan, whether it's over the last few weeks, a Yankees fan, probably be like, how the hell does this guy who tops out at 91 on his possible pitch make Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton late on a fastball?
Yeah,
but he would just be the kind of guy that drives me nuts being an opposing fan, because it's like, man, he just seems so hittable. He doesn't throw hard, but he's just he's Picasso. That's the best way of putting it, Adam. It really is.
Yeah, of these three players, like it's really hard for me, even though you sort of joked about it, but we're serious, Brendan, about just being confident in all three. I don't understand how you can't be, right? And I think when you have Ryu coming out every fifth or sixth, you know what you're going to expect here and out. And with the addition of Vladdy being just so confident, Bo being confident, and once you think they're producing well now, which they are, wait until Springer's in this lineup, right? Because I sincerely think that even though they might not be future, imagine Bo batting third and Springer first, and or Bo second. Let's try that, right? Springer first, Bo second, and Vladdy third. Oh man, that is an incredible 1-2-3.
Not to mention get her and everybody back and just run with it. Yeah,
yeah, you can't pitch around that, especially how they are right now. You can't pitch around that. So
lock.
They are. I agree, Brendan. I think all three, you should be confident moving forward. All right, we're sort of going over. I know it's whatever, but
I interject. The fans on Twitter brought out the fact that Steven Matz and I forget who the other one was they mentioned. And Ray looking good this last good standouts too going forward, just because of the fact that I kind of thought there was something in the tank there, guys. I don't know what you're – I know you guys are in that same school of thought with me, but most of the Blue Jays Nation have them written off. So,
I think the expectations were quite high given spring training.
Good, not like, oh, my God, he actually could be good.
I didn't think it'd be like this. I was quietly confident in Robbie Ray continuing what he was doing from spring training, because at least he's done it in the past. It's really – if Ray can build on start, which I very much believe he can – then last year looks like a true outlier in terms of his career, where he's just walking everybody because his mechanics, for whatever reason, even though he was coming off two really good years in a row, well, maybe not good years in a row in 2018, 2019, he says, like, I'm going to fuck with my mechanics. And it backfired on him. And now he's back to throwing strikes way more consistently. Ray's outing, even though they lost on Monday, was super encouraging. And combining that with how Ryu and Matt up to this point, the rotation that we were all thinking, oh, okay, I mean, outside of Ryu, I don't know what the hell we're going to get. I'm starting to feel confident 3 out of 5 turns through the rotation are going to be solid moving forward. And as soon as Pearson or Hatch get back and there's a fourth in that mix, watch out, because they could start winning games like 3-2 or 4-2 if the offense isn't hitting, and it'll just give the offense more time to figure their shit out.
And then one of our Twitter fans' questions earlier, Pearson threw a bullpen and it went well. And the key word was, I think, 100% intensity was what they were more or less saying during that.
Yeah.
Did they mention during the broadcast today how well he bounced back from that bullpen session? I knew they talked about it, but that's all I remember.
No, it's just been sort of he looked good and he's progressing. The word progressing has been used a lot, and incremental progression or large scale progression, we don't know. Springer, I wouldn't expect until May. I think they're gonna play it very safe with both of them.
Yeah, Springer,
that
really
is almost like a trade deadline early, right?
Really trade deadline, absolutely. It seems like, just based on the broadcast last night, Springer is not traveling with the team, so he's staying back in Dunedin. And Buck and Pat were saying last night that with the Rays and the Marlins being so close, they're having like live competitive at bats, and Springer's going to start taking some then. So I'm leaning towards you, Adam, with May. It really depends on how some of these ABs go and how he feels next week when they come back to Dunedin for next weekend.
Well, speaking of May, let's move on to our final topic. Last Friday, yeah, there you go, segue points. last Friday, it was announced that the Bisons, the Buffalo Bisons, will open up their season in Trenton, New Jersey, leading many to see the writing on the wall that the Jays will be returning to Buffalo at some point in the very near future. Now, this wasn't, you know, sort of an outlandish question with the border issues and COVID being a thing. I think we all thought that eventually they're going to end up going to Buffalo, given also the heat that is produced in Dunedin come like May and early June. Hopefully this means
as F is about the best way.
Yeah,
I can
yeah. Hopefully 6:37 game time.
Yeah. Anyways, that was gonna be more like a 9 o'clock at night. Just hold. Hey, you could pray to God that it would be nice enough to swing a bat and not be.
Bring 6:37 game times at Salem Field. Speaking of Salem Field, they'll be undergoing some sort of construction. Recently, they will be in preparation for the Jays' arrival. The current plan right now, as if I understand it, is the plan to play in Dunedin through May 24th, after which the likelihood of a return to Buffalo is very high. Now, Craig, you are our resident Western New Yorker. Do you think that the travels and the flip-flopping of home fields will be a detriment to the Jays, or do you think these adjustments have been no stranger to the Blue Jays and they will make adjustments rather quickly and just produce?
Honest, selfish opinion, I think the Blue Jays are going to love being back in Buffalo because that's where they have won most recently.
Yes.
Yeah, I think they might feel that there's something to the something that refills the tank moving back to Buffalo. Hey, we were here last as champions, class Ric Flair. So I honestly think that could be a giant shot in the arm for this team as far as getting them up and moving, and really, especially offense, guys. No offense to the new ballpark, Renan's not in Dunedin, but that's a big damn wall all the way out around that field, yeah, regardless of yeah, what's going true on. I get the idea of them doing that was to get the dimensions to play like the Rogers Center, which is the reason that they quote-unquote changed those walls around in the little ballpark down in Dunedin. But in all reality, it's kind of a hindrance for now a regular season baseball game. You know, those walls look like they're like 10 feet tall all the way around. So you go back to Buffalo, where they had been done but tee up home runs at a record-setting pace basically last year in a 60-game season. I think that this is the difference in the world, and if the pitching can hold on together like it's been doing right now, this is a very dangerous team heading back into Buffalo, and could be the reason that they get a nice, like I said, a little catalyst to run right into the playoffs.
I don't think it's going to be an issue for pretty much all the points that Craig just made. I really think that this decision is more so to get some more money in their pockets from fan revenue. Surely there will obviously be more fans there because it's a bigger stadium.
I think it's about 6,000 people. I'll look it up while you're talking.
yeah, it's the case. That's great. I mean, at least there's some people coming through. And another thing that I've noticed a lot on Twitter recently is there's more and more Blue Jays fans that I see in their bio with Buffalo, New York as a location of where they're based. And if they go back there for a second straight year, play good baseball, get the city excited, you could start making the case that Buffalo is a Blue Jays city because there's a lot of Yankees fans there. There's a lot of Yankees fans in Rochester. And Craig, for people like yourself who can drive the hour across the state.
Well, I'll be there. Yeah, and apparently they're looking to hire. So maybe I'm just peacing out of here, fellas. See ya.
Hey, yeah, go for it, man. That's not a bad idea.
The hot dog's like the conehead.
Yeah, be the new conehead. But yeah, Toronto at some point. But with just how slow the vaccine roll effective it seemingly has been, we're getting close to 15 or 20% of all of Ontario, but that's still not good enough to this point to make me feel good. And I don't know if you guys saw this. I think I retweeted it. If you want Ontario right now, Japan announced travel restrictions were strengthened for two countries around the world, and they singled out of Ontario.
Wow.
Japan as a country.
The spot
was they flat out in the province of Ontario for having tighter travel restrictions, or I'm not sure if they banned it or not, but yeah, Ontario's not doing well right now, so it's harder and harder to believe that they will be back. As I said before recording, I just hope that there will be a chance to at least go see a game in Buffalo, because I think that'd be so cool. Craig, when we went back in 2019 to see the Bisons there, I'm like, man, I hope Buffalo in the future could be in contention for an MLB franchise. It was just so fun. And I think the city would really love having their own baseball team there. If they can call the Blue Jays home for a little bit longer and we can go and see a major league game there, I think that'd just be the coolest thing ever. And then get the fuck back to Toronto in 2020.
Yeah, that area of Buffalo is a rarity in sports, similar to how the Blue Jays and the Raptors and everything are in the downtown area of Toronto, just to give everybody the ballpark idea here.
Right.
Right in that same area of the city is the Buffalo Sabres and the Junior Hockey League Practice Center, the actual Buffalo Sabres Arena in the First Niagara Center, and then Salem Field is literally 5 feet down the street. And then around that is just bars, food, drinking, breweries, shopping, everything. So it's very – if you were going to be putting a stadium somewhere, the Buffalo Bills have been wanting to move downtown for – basically since the inception of Buffalo. As much as I love going out to Orchard Park for a good tailgate and a football game, it is something to say for being right in downtown, but that's what the Bills would be sacrificing, going downtown. The tailgating there would be toast, and that will never happen. Bills culture all the way. Tables and ladders and chairs, oh my.
Mafia.
So, that being said, it is a great spot to go see a ball game, as Brendan got the pleasure of joining me in chicken wings and baseball and then beers afterwards. And I think that was stumbling, walking. I think we got back home all right.
Okay, somehow, but your point to there being a bunch of bars around there, found that out very much firsthand. And you don't want to know something funny? Adam, you mentioned, I was just going through, underneath that Rays series on the 24th, they have in Dunedin, Florida. After that, the first home series after that, that could home opener, is against the Marlins, just like last year was. Oh. And that's when the season changed. I'm not going to say that they will be in need of a spark, but if it plays out similarly to what it did last year, for it.
Yeah. Look, I think the adjustment is going to be that difficult for them, right? I think that they're familiar with the ballpark. They're going to make more, hopefully, just to the home side, and the away side is just like a tent.
Yeah.
Just as long as the Yankees, whenever they come to town, they get the pop tent. I don't care. I want to hear Clint Frazier and company bitch.
No, dugout for you. Go to the tent.
Apparently, they're putting a pen in,
that's it. Go to your
in
tent.
The back. They're not putting them on the sides anymore. So the bullpens for each respective teams are going to be behind the fence in the back, which is good. Like, there's a safety protocol for that. I think that's good. But this ball club, I think, to this team in particular, now, if this was the 2015 Blue Jays, I think they'd be rip shit. And I honestly think this would be a detriment to them. But seeing as though this core has come up through and they are familiar, very familiar with this field, not just from last year, but previously in the minors, I think they're ready to go. And I think they're looking forward for Buffalo to be their home and to play in front of a crowd, like you guys just said. We sort of touched on it, but... Craig, I do think you're right. Right now, it is 6,000 fans can be allowed.
Just did the math. So it's 6,000 fans if they follow I think it's still allegedly 15%.
Okay.
Is the capacity here in New York State for a big event like that. So Salem Field being, I just lost it. But anyway, it's about 2,500 fans at 15%.
Even better.
So, okay. But that's a solid amount, because that's basically, I think, the actual full capacity for the Dunedin ballpark is like 5,000 or 6,000.
Right.
So you're talking, what, 70 people?
Yeah. It sounds like a spring training game every time you see them play in Dunedin. But, you know, it's the fact that they're going to be playing, or the potential to be playing, in front of a larger crowd, and to have that energy, specifically from Buffalo, which we know they can bring the energy. It's great. Exactly. And the fact that they probably brought new fans last year in the Western New York area.
I can attest for that.
Yeah, there you go. I think this is going to be big for them, and I think there's going to be a lot of energy and a lot of motivation for them to play well. Craig, I sort of cut you off earlier. You said, are there more comments, questions, or something?
Oh, no.
All right.
No, sorry.
All right. No, all good. I just didn't know.
I was trying to get the inject in there of the fans being actually out there.
Yeah.
Not to mention, apparently, I'm going to apply for a grounds crew position.
There you go.
The Salem Field is hiring grounds crew members, cashiers, cooks, porters, and stand managers. So,
do
I guess see if they get a part time job outside of my other new job?
I will. Weekends.
Yeah. In fact, also, you legitimately will be able to attend these games. Now, last year, it was just like, I can go in the outfield, or I can go behind and watch them
stand on the freaking highway, like,
yeah.
Police to come get rid of you.
Yes.
Had nothing to see here. Move along.
Yeah.
You know, Like, out of the three of us, you can be the resident person that's able to see them on a however often you are able to, but you'll be able to do it. And I know right now Cuomo is challenging the legality of Erie County, saying you can only go to events if you are fully vaccinated. That's in sort of legal dispute. But if that's the case and they don't go back to Canada, which is, Fred and I agree with you, it's probably not likely this season.
Yep.
Come July, August, if they're like, all right, if you're vaccinated in full capacity, yeah. Oh, man. Oh,
I bet. Well, I'll even give you that, because here in Monroe County where I live, they've gotten to the point allegedly that a quarter of the people, so every one out of four people, have gotten at least their first shot here in Monroe County.
Go. Wow.
Like I said, I was shocked that I was even allowed to go the other day, because they weren't talking about opening my healthy age group of 36 out until, like, you know, basically June.
Right.
So, but
that's pretty good.
Is a very long fact about Rochester, in the midst of all the fun and what we used to have here in the Kodak and Xeroxes, and apparently someone from some certain country during World War II actually wanted to bomb our economy back to the Stone Age by taking Rochester, New York out. But, the medical industry has always been something crazy here in Rochester, and we have some of the best research. And they actually were testing the Pfizer vaccine at the University of Rochester here in Rochester when it all was quote-unquote deemed ready for testing. So I think people roll here in Western New York a little bit quicker. And if we're doing those kind of numbers here, I would think that Buffalo is probably in that same ballpark. So Cuomo and his whole infinite dumb fuckery. Yes, I said it. Make everybody use those damn cards to get into the ball game, because in my opinion, by the time that the Blue Jays and whatnot are going to be back here in town, that's going to be closer to, you know, every two people, you know, half of the area here is going to be closer to being done in the next month, if we're talking about this ridiculous cliff that we're doing here in Western New York. And like I said, we might be leading that part right now. It's a little weird, but it is what it is. But if that gives us some Blue Jays time and I can bring better coverage to everybody here on the show, I'm going to do it. I have to do one show where I'm literally sitting in the stands and barking at you guys through my mask.
Look, man, if you're able to do it and you're around people that are fully vaccinated, more power to you.
Absolutely.
I'm glad we all agree that Buffalo is a good destination for them. Not that Dunedin's bad. It's
home
just,
would
I,
be
I
better.
But yes, I do think Buffalo is a good consolation. All right, before we wrap up, let's predict the next two series. They're traveling to Kansas City. I think four games, is it?
Yep.
And then two against Boston?
Yes.
Okay, so, Brennan, we'll start with you. Of those six games, what do you think they're going to be doing?
I said the same thing last week about a four-game series. I hate four-game series, so I'm going to be conservative and say two out of four against Kansas City. I'm just going through the probables right now. We still don't know who's pitching for Toronto, but tomorrow is Jacob Junis, who's actually pretty decent for Kansas City. Friday, Mats against Mike Minor, who the Blue Jays have hit in the past, including this current core of Blue Jays. Saturday, Robbie Ray gets his second start against Brady Singer, who's struggled like crazy, so that looks pretty good. And Ryu gets who's off to a good start. So now that I look at that, and you got Mats, Ray, and Ryu going in three straight days, I'm a little more optimistic after looking at that. So you know what? I'll take a risk and say three out of four against Kansas City, and I'm keeping up against Boston. I know Ryu definitely won't be pitching in one of those, but I'll just take a split there. So, you know, they go 4-2 on this next stretch.
What say ye, Craig?
The Royals sweep their Sox. Woo-hoo! We're going to put the Sox back in their place.
I hope so, man.
They are 9 of their last 10.
Like I said, they need to be put back in their place. Just freaking make it happen. Go into their backyard, take a crap. It'll be all right.
Remember when the Blue Jays in 2009 in the Fenway Park, first place in the American League East, and the Blue Jays got embarrassed in that series and they never recovered for the rest of the year? That's what's going to happen in this series. The Blue Jays are going to go embarrass Boston and they will never recover. Let's just go with that.
Killing me.
I think Blue Jays will take three out of Kansas City. I have a lot of faith in those three starters. We've been sort of hyping them up. I think they have the ability to take three, no problem. And I do think they split with the Red Sox. So I'm going to go 4 out of 6. Brennan, I think you said the same thing.
Yep.
I would like to see a sweep against Boston. Believe me, I would like to see a sweep against Boston. And, you know, if they are able to do that, I think that's going to be leading credence to what you said, Brendan, the start of the downfall to the Reds. I don't think it's legit. I know it's a fun story. They won 9 in a row after getting swept by the Orioles. But still, I do not see this sustaining. And I think the Blue Jays are the perfect team right now to just really put a damper on that.
I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid that Mark DeRosa was passing around this morning on MLB Network.
No. It's the Red Sox. They're a fun story. Great. Cool.
Go Red Sox.
Yeah, no. Blue Jays are a better story. All right. Picks to click. Craig, what
this
do we
is
have
insulting,
for
fellas.
Week?
That's all I'm going to
say.
What
do we got?
Oh, we all took outfielders, I remember.
We all took horrible is what it was really down to. Brendan, your pick played a whole one game, I think, Teoscar Hernandez.
Yep. Yeah.
So I'm just going to call you out, but well, you might be still in the running when I lay out the rest of this nonsense here.
Okay.
Adam picked Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who I also think played a whole three games.
He also was sick with COVID, or the shot. He was sick with the after effects.
Correct. Yeah. Or it was they thought he might be exposed or something like that, or I don't know what it was.
But... No, that was Teoscar, and then he actually got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I picked Randall Grichuk.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then our fan spot, the guest spot, picked Rowdy Tellez, who unfortunately had two hits the whole week. So as much as I'd love to give the fans, because I don't know, am I really edging you guys out with fucking Randall Grichuk over the last week?
All those three, yes.
Yeah, for sure. He's been the most consistent all year, and even if he hasn't had a good last week, at least played the majority of the games. Yeah, I give it to you, Craig, and I know that would be your first one for quite a while.
So
you didn't get one last year. You didn't get on the board once last year.
Yeah, because of the whole 60-game season. It's been a year. I'm just as good as last quality start for Tanner Roark.
Yes. You're sort of like the Rowdy Tellez story. He was 0 for 28 going back from last year into now. Yes. You know, you were over, 60, and now you're here.
I'm leaning toward the ballpark here that I'm 0 for 13 like Alejandro Kirk was before he knocked one out of the park today.
Saying.
Hey, go for it.
That being said, let's pick them. Brendan, do you want to start? Who are you looking at for your pick to click?
Sure. Last few years, one thing that worked for me was going on the pitching side of things, and I've done that. So, because I want to get back in front and in the leaderboard, I'm going to go to the pitching side of things, and it'll be a starter. I'm going to go Robbie Ray. I think he's going to have a pretty good start on Saturday. Again, I think he looked fine on Monday against the Yankees. There was nothing that was concerning to me. I know those three walks or four walks, but man, he was like those fastballs that he like just missed on the plate could have been called a strike by another umpire. And his line and his overall pitch count could have allowed him to go maybe even six if that was the case. So the new and improved Robbie Ray I'm going to roll with for this one. And for some reason, I just really like the guy. I don't know what it is. He just looks like a cool dude out in the mound. I think he's pretty even-keeled, probably a good guy. So Robbie Ray for me.
There you go.
What do you got, Craig?
I'm just going to fly the Vladdy train for my second. I'm going to pick him for the second time for this season.
There you go.
I just want to, you know, I just finally won one. I want to kind of like make it two in a row just to make sure that I'm not a horrid waste. But with my luck,
you take starters because you have one, maybe two max opportunities. So if you have one good start, you're on board where six games in a row for a position player, they have an offer or something.
Yeah,
bingo. That's true. You know what? I'm going to let's go Rowdy. I think he's going to turn it around.
I was actually leaning in that same direction, too, for a second. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm just going to take his counterpart.
You know? The worst thing, I know it's not his decision, but the worst thing the front office on analytics alone can do is try to get him out because he's just starting to break out of the slump. And if he gets an off day for no reason just because of analytics, I think it's going to fuck him up. So hopefully they don't do that.
He needs some consistency to run into it. Yeah. I really think, like we were talking about earlier in the show, his approach is looking more like his normal approach the last two games. I think he's finally gotten to the point where, you know what, fuck it. I'm just going to go back to doing what I was doing. Game on.
And he homered off of a lefty yesterday too, and Mike Minor starting Friday, who's a lefty. Let him play.
I don't see a reason never to start him against lefties anyway. He's not Adam Linding anywhere here.
No.
Or even like you mentioned earlier, Colby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, but
all right, guys,
Blue Jays fans, I'm gonna make sure after this, because nobody's getting in after all the, you know, fun chat that we've had so far this game. You know, apparently when it comes to picks to click, nobody really wants to be official. So
they don't want to lose.
Yeah, that's it. After all the Matt's feedback that we got, I'm about to pencil in Steven Matt's for the slash guest spot this week and just make him deal with it. But I'll put it out
that's
on Twitter.
That's a bad way to do it. Do that.
He had the most buzz outside of who we've been talking about this week. So let's put Matt's down for the guest spot. And if any of you want to correct me out there, you know, make sure you hit us up. Make me change the pick or I'll write a couple in.
give them a chance until tomorrow at 8:09 before the first pitch is thrown. Whoever gets the most votes, that's the guest spot.
There you go.
Well, that being said, we are optimistic about future within the next two series. We are feeling good about the first 12 games of the season. You know, given the hiccups that we talked about from three players, there are still positive things to extrapolate from this team, and the best is just starting. And then when George Springer gets on this team, watch out. I think it's going to be a very fun ride. But that being said, that's going to conclude today's show. We thank you for joining us. If you join us live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, all the above, Twitch, we appreciate you joining in on the fun. We hope you can have you again next week. Remember, on Thursday, for the next four Thursdays, that is when we are going to be live. If you are listening to us on the podcast feed, and we appreciate it, and we are on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, basically wherever we get your podcasts fixed. We'd appreciate it if you give us 5 stars and a quick review on Apple Podcasts if you are consuming the product there. We appreciate it. Subscribe to us also on YouTube, as I mentioned. Like, share, tell your friends about it. Tell your fellow Blue Jays fans about our show. We appreciate it. And let's close this out like we always do. Two claps, Ric Flair. Let's go, Blue Jays.
Woo! Let's go, Blue Jays.